Okay, well, so much for that quarterback controversy, and so much for the idiots, as I would directly call them in the past 2 weeks, who were asserting that Nick Mullins could follow the same career trajectory as Tom Brady. There were people comparing this situation between Garoppolo and Mullins to the situation in 2001 with the New England Patriots, or Drew Bledsoe and Tom Brady, meaning that this unheralded, anonymous quarterback comes out of nowhere with this take over for the incumbent starter and lead his team to a Super Bowl and end up becoming the greatest quarterback of all time. So Jimmy Garoppolo in this scenario would be your Drew Bledsoe and Nick Mullins would be your Tom Brady. Anyone who said that is probably still waiting on a second stimulus check. They're fucking crazy. Nick Mullins is a good quarterback when no pressure is on him. Nick Mullins is a poor man's version of Ryan Fitzpatrick. Nick Mullins is, for real 49er fans, you'll appreciate this, Nick Mullins is the upgraded version of JT O'Sullivan. So last Sunday night against the Eagles on NBC Sunday Night Football, Nick Mullins had the opportunity to make a lot of money for himself and position himself possibly to get traded somewhere else, potentially for a second or third round pick. And in one night, he went from potentially being the 49ers starting quarterback to potentially being someone else's starting quarterback and getting a lot of money in the process to being the third string quarterback in the depth chart all in one night. That's how bad he was in that game Sunday night versus the Philadelphia Eagles. Awful. An atrocious performance. 3 turnovers, which led to 17 points. That pretty much cost us the game. We'll get into all that and more on this latest episode of the Deion Gordon Podcast. I'm your host, Deion Gordon. Welcome back. Thanks for listening. We'll start with the good. We'll get into Mullins later. I just want to set the table a little bit. We'll start with the good first. The good, I shouldn't even call it the good. It's called the fucking awesome. George Kittle, 15 catches, 183 yards, 1 touchdown. Once again, that dude's incredible. That dude's a pure football player. He's showing you why he got that 5-year, $75 million contract in the offseason. He reset the market for tight ends because he's the best tight end in pro football, with all apologies to Travis Kelce, as great as he is. But George Kittle, to me, what separates Kittle from Kelce is that Kittle is a better blocker. And Kittle helps us out with our run game. You can line him up in the backfield and hand it off to him as he did a few times in the first half. Obviously, he's a great pass catcher. You can split him out wide. You can line up on the line of scrimmage. You can line him up anywhere on the football field, and he can affect the game with or without the ball in his hands. He's the best football player on our team. The NFL 100, that Kittle ranked, I think, is the 9th best football player in the league. You can debate that. I think he's top 10. I think he's top 5, personally. I think Kittle's a top 5 football player in the entire league, just for his versatility and what he can do and what he brings to the team. His ability to affect the game with or without the ball in his hands. George Kittle, 85 for the San Francisco 49ers, is fucking awesome. Obviously, that's the best part of the game for us. An otherwise flat, disappointing, heartbreaking, soul-crushing performance for the 49ers last Sunday. Another good to have number 19 back in the field, my man Deebo Samuel. 3 catches, 35 yards, a few carries, a few end arounds to him, got some rushing yards. Just good seeing him back on the field. He broke his foot in the offseason. He was scheduled to be out for probably the first month of the season. Made it back in week 4, looked healthy, didn't see any hiccups out there, didn't see any symptoms of a re-injury and anything like that. So good to have number 19 back in the field. Brandon Ayuk, the rookie out of Arizona State, number 11, had the highlight of the game. He took a lateral. It was a backwards pass from Mullins. So this counts as a rushing touchdown, not a receiving touchdown. Took a lateral from Mullins about 38 yards. Outran the Eagles defense. And with one more defender to beat, straight jumped over this dude. He jumped over this dude the same way females jump to conclusions. Spectacular play. Great play. Highlighted the game easily, just showing off his athleticism, his agility. Brandon Ayuk is special. Him and Deebo on the field together could be lethal, along with Kittle. And wait till we get Mostert and Coleman back in the fold. Continuing on with the good, 49er defense, I thought, had an outstanding game last Sunday. Only gave up 267 yards total offense. Third down efficiency, the Eagles were only 4 for 13, so we did a good job of getting off the field on third down. Only 93 yards rushing for the Eagles. Carson Wentz only 174 yards passing. Forced a turnover in the first quarter. Javon Kinlaw, the rookie out of South Carolina, got his hands on a tip ball. The ball fell into the hands of our linebacker, Al Shahir. Able to come up with the interception. Unfortunately, unable to come up with points to capitalize on that turnover. But once again, we'll get into that later. So I thought our defense played well, given the circumstances with the litany of injuries we had on defense. Obviously, you already know Bosa is out for the season. Solomon Thomas is out. Richard Sherman did not play. He's not played since week one with the calf. We got a who's who of defensive backs playing in our secondary. I had to reactivate Dante Johnson off the practice squad. And that came back to bite us later on. There's a reason why he's on the practice squad. I thought Jason Verrett played well, though. The second week in a row, I thought Verrett was outstanding. Fred Warner, same thing, you know. To me, I rank our football players on a team like this. I think Kittle's the best player we have. I think Bosa is second. I think Fred Warner overall is the third best football player in the 49ers. All names being considered. 54 is everywhere, from sideline to sideline. You know, a regulation football field is 53 yards wide. 54 covers that 53, put it like that. He to me, there's a lot of similarities in his game and Navarro Bowman, legendary 49er linebacker, great 49er player. For so many years, especially during that Jim Harbaugh era. Navarro Bowman was great from sideline to sideline, and that's what I see with Fred Warner. Patrick Willis, too. I see some shades of Patrick Willis in Fred Warner's game. The guy's just everywhere. He's a beast. Eric Armstead had a great game, 6 quarterback hits, tackle for a loss in the backfield. So our defense, I thought, held together and kept us in the game, gave us every opportunity to win this game. Continuing on with the defense, I'm going to show some love to Quan Alexander. Last week, I said that Quan Alexander was like someone who's driving 100 miles per hour but doesn't know where he's going. Well, this week, he found the GPS. I thought Quan played a hell of a game last Sunday. 9 tackles, 6 solo. Didn't make the mistakes that I was calling out and criticizing from last week and from the first 3 games of the season. He wasn't in a hurry to get somewhere and didn't know where he was going. I thought he played with great patience. He understood his assignments. I thought he... rebounded, had a better game. There were still some plays where the Eagles were able to break, contain, and get outside the pocket with Wentz. And later on, they threw in Jalen Hurts for a few plays here and there and trying to get some gadget plays, but they didn't really materialize. But there still were some plays where we couldn't contain the quarterback in the pocket and we're still able to get out. But I wouldn't pin that on Quan Alexander this week. I thought he played well, so I got to, you know, if I'm going to criticize you, I got to keep it 100. So when you play well, I got to give you your flowers while you're still living. So Quan Alexander, I thought, had a great game. So that about wraps it up for the good. So now, when you lose a football game, there's only so much good. Fred, like I said, George Kittle, the best player on our team. Fucking phenomenal, outstanding, great, all the superlatives you can possibly give him. Debo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk on the field. Excellent. Defense gave us a chance to win. Everything else gave us a chance to lose. And we'll start with the bad now. We'll start with our head coach, Kyle Shanahan. But the play calling and some of the decision making was a little questionable. I'll start with the play calling aspect. First half, we're getting all these big chunks of yards with reverses, jet sweeps, end arounds, misdirection plays, everything you typically see in a Shanahan offense. So in the second half, he stops calling those plays. I just didn't understand it. And if we're getting big chunks of yardage with those plays, keep running it until they stop it. I remember hearing Bill Parcells say that back in the day. Parcells was always talking about how predictable the Giants' offense was. And he would just run the same plays over and over again until you figure out a way to stop it. Shanahan, the biggest criticism I ever give Shanahan is that he has a reputation of being an offensive genius, and I think he's fully aware of that. So I think it's sort of like Mike Martz back in the day. It's like every other guy that's been labeled an offensive genius. You're so smart that sometimes you outsmart yourself. And Shanahan, I guess, thought that, well, these players are working so well in the first half, so they'll probably adjust and see it coming in the second half. So we'll just stop running them. And we'll just run it straight up the middle with Jerick McKinnon for about a 3-yard gain. I didn't understand why you deviate from the plays that were working so well in the first half and go to what's obviously not working in the second half. We couldn't really get our run game started. You know, Brandon Ayuk had a 38-yard touchdown run in the first quarter, and that really skews the rushing yardage and the rushing numbers at the end of the game. As far as a consistent run game, it wasn't there. We definitely missing Mostert and Tevin Coleman. Jerick McKinnon's a great story. He scored a touchdown in every game so far this season. He has 4 touchdowns on the year. But I'm not sure if McKinnon, I don't think McKinnon is an every down back. And coming off the back-to-back knee injuries, I don't think he's as fast and explosive as he used to be. He's still a playmaker. Like I say, he scored a touchdown every week. But I don't think McKinnon should ever be our number one running back. I think that's Raheem Mostert's job. McKinnon should be a spot back. Throw him in there every now and then. Give him opportunities. Keep him on the field as long as he's healthy. But for him to be an every down back, I don't think he has what it takes. I would have liked to see more Jamichael Hasty this week. I thought he looked pretty good last week versus the Giants. Jeff Wilson Jr. only had 6 carries. The bulk of the carries with Jet McKinnon. And, you know, 14 carries from McKinnon and 54 yards, 3.9 yards a carry. Like I said, Brandon Ayuk with a 38-yard carry. So the Niners is a team that got 116 yards rushing, but you take away that 38-yard run by Ayuk, and you're less than 100 yards rushing. So couldn't get the running game going, deviated from the play calling that was working so well in the first half. I put a lot of that on Shanahan. And I also thought it was a critical juncture in the game where C.J. Beathard has come in. He benched Mullins. C.J. comes in the game, takes over, takes us down the field. We score a touchdown with Jet McKinnon to bring it to 25-20. Went for two, won the play. The two-point conversion didn't work. It's 25-20, and we scored before the two-minute warning. So we have an opportunity. Kyle decides to go for the onside kick. I didn't agree with that decision. I would have kicked it deep with Wisnowski and pinned them back and made them go the length of the field. So if you get that three and out, you get that stop. Now they have to punt. We get better field positioning and a shorter field at the drive for a potential go-ahead score. Kyle elected to go for an onside kick, and it wasn't so much that the fact that he went for the onside kick, it was also the execution of it. I thought Robbie Gould had a shitty onside kick and went right into the hands of an Eagles defender. So there was never any doubt about who was getting the ball back. Philadelphia gets the ball back in midfield. We force a three and out. They punt. We have to start from our own 10-yard line. So having to go 90 yards with no timeouts is definitely a lot more challenging than having to go, let's say, 50 or 60 yards with no timeouts. That's one of the reasons why we lost the game. So I thought Kyle's decision-making right there, with 2 minutes left, you could have taken a chance. Trust your defense. Your defense has played well all night. Like I said earlier, they only gave up 267 yards. It wasn't like the Eagles were killing us. We gave them opportunities. We gave them 17 points with turnovers. So I thought Kyle could have been much better from a play-calling perspective and from a decision-making perspective as well. The one decision he made that I liked was benching Mullins late and putting CJ in the game. I feel like that really gave the team a spark going forward. CJ was able to come in off the bench and take us downfield and score. So I feel like at that time, situation, and circumstance, Nick had to go. Nick had to be benched because that interception he threw, the pick six he threw, where he dropped back to pass, locked in on his receiver, and didn't see the linebacker sitting underneath on the route, threw it right to him, walked into the end zone. That was pretty much the game. That was so egregiously bad, Nick had to be benched. So on that one, I'll give Kyle credit for making that decision. Speaking of the ugly, get right into it. Nick Mullins was fucking trash Sunday night. No other way to put it. Can't sugarcoat it. 18-26, 200 yards, 1 touchdown, 2 interceptions, and a fumble. One of those interceptions was a pick six. As I said at the onset of this podcast, the opportunities were right there in front of Nick Mullins. You had a shot to be traded to another team. You played well on Sunday night. Consider that an audition for the rest of the league, for the entire country. The whole world's watching. Everyone's been waiting all day for Sunday night. Al Michaels, Chris Collinsworth are there, NBC. You're the only game on right now. That was an audition for Nick Mullins. You could have positioned yourself to potentially get traded to another team. They were talking about for maybe a second or third round pick. There were some rumors going around that teams were offering or thinking about offering a second or third round pick for Mullins. So he could have went somewhere else and cashed in. He could have been, you know, the modern day Scott Mitchell. Scott Mitchell played quarterback for the Dolphins in 93. Dan Marino tore his Achilles. Mitchell played well at the end of the season and then got a lot of money from Detroit and played like shit, stunk it up. Pretty much stole that money, but the fact is he got the money. Nick Mullins was in that position. Nick was in a position with his own team to potentially unseat Jimmy Garoppolo as the starter if he had continued to play well. If Nick had gone out there and let's say had gone like, I don't know, 29 or 40, 350, 4 touches, no picks, just looked calm and poised the same way he looked last week versus New York. If Nick had gone out there and played well, then you have a quarterback controversy. Then you have something to talk about, something to write about, something to read about. Then all of a sudden, then Jimmy Garoppolo's ankle doesn't feel that bad. He might want to get back on the field. He might feel that way now with our poor Nick play, with our quarterback situation being what it is. But Nick had it all right there in front of him. The opportunity, the moment, seize the moment. It was right there in front of him, and he shit the bed. flat performance. He gave nothing. He was, you know, outside of one touchdown pass to George Kittle, he was awful the entire game. I knew Nick was off at the very beginning when he had Kyle Juszczyk wide open in the flat and he missed him. Kyle Juszczyk was socially distant from the Eagles defenders. No one was in 20 yards of him. He was the only person on screen. And if you go back and watch the replay, Juszczyk was on screen by himself. Not a white jersey was around him. And Mullins airmailed it to him. Missed a wide open play. Easy completion. Big play. Could have came out of that. I knew right then and there, this dude's fucked up tonight. And he's, like I said before, he's the modern day Ryan Fitzpatrick. He can't handle prosperity. Guys like that who are not supposed to be good will play good for a little bit. And then when people start to realize, hey, this guy's pretty good, when the pressure's on him, they fold. They turn into shit. Fitzpatrick's made a whole career out of it. Nick might do the same, but Nick had an opportunity last Sunday night to really establish himself, and it just didn't come to fruition. And it wasn't just the three turnovers. It was the timing of the three turnovers. That first pick, 49ers putting together a drive at the end of the first half, right before the two-minute warning. We're down 8-7 at this point. You have an opportunity to potentially score a touchdown, go up 14-8 right before halftime. So you take a 14-8 lead into the locker room. 49ers got the ball first in the second half, and they scored in that first possession. So now you could potentially be up 21-8 against a beleaguered football team who hasn't won a game yet. So who knows what that would have done to the Eagles mentally and emotionally. They're down 21-8 on the road. They haven't won a game yet. They tied last week for Cincinnati. You go up 21-8 on a team like that, you could potentially bury that team right then and there. And instead of doing that, Mullins got pressure. Mike McGlinchey got destroyed on his block, by the way. Again, that was a recurring theme throughout the game. Mike McGlinchey is fucking terrible, and I'll get to him in a little bit. But Mullins threw a wounded duck up in the air, and it was intercepted. A play that shouldn't have been thrown. Should just eat the throw, Nick. Just take the sack. Live to fight another day. You don't have to make every play. That's something a lot of young quarterbacks struggle with. They feel like they got to make every play. Sometimes the best play is a non-play. Throw it out of bounds. Don't throw it at all. Just take the sack. Run out of bounds. Escape. Save yourself. Save your body. Save your team. You don't have to make every big play. Nick tried to make a big play, and it came back to bite him. So instead of a potential go-ahead score at that point in the game, now it's just nothing. That whole drive meant nothing. Now it's 8-7 going to the locker room. Philadelphia still has the lead. You leave players on the field. You miss opportunities. You lose football games. It's happened in San Francisco twice this year. It happened week one versus Arizona. It happened to Nick Mullins. It happened to the 49ers again in week four versus Philadelphia. To that point, as badly as Mullins played, I've seen online, I've heard people say, you know, you got a lot of Jimmy Garoppolo supporters out there. You got a lot of people who are pro Jimmy, I think Jimmy's our Lord and Savior. He's the future of the franchise. You can't say anything negative about Jimmy Garoppolo. For the pro Garoppolo people, I've seen them gloating with glee at the poor performance of Nick Mullins last Sunday night, celebrating, rejoicing this, as if Nick Mullins doesn't play for the same football team Jimmy Garoppolo plays for. I'll say this right now. I don't give a fuck who plays quarterback for the 49ers. I don't care if it's Garoppolo. I don't care if it's Mullins. I don't care if it's C.J. Beathard. I don't care if it's Jim Druckenmiller. I don't care if it's Tim Rattay, Sean Hill, Elvis Gerbach, whoever the fuck it needs to be. As long as they're productive, all I care about is the 49ers winning. But to see people online celebrating Mullins and his failures last Sunday as if it's validation, it proves them right. See, I told you so. I told you he wasn't good. I told you he was trash. I told you there shouldn't have been no quarterback controversy. I told you Jimmy's the guy. People are out there with these kind of sentiments and this kind of, you know, this thought process, and it baffles me because, like, you're a 49er fan. Why are you celebrating this dude's struggles? Why are you celebrating this guy's poor performance? You should be hoping that he played at a high level. Are you that much in the tank for Jimmy Garoppolo that you want Nick Mullins or C.J. Beathard to struggle so that Garoppolo keeps his job? Are you on Garoppolo's personal payroll? Does he know you? Are you a family member of Jimmy Garoppolo? I don't give a fuck if he's a starter or not. Like I said last week, the fact that this was even being talked about as a quarterback controversy is an indictment on Garoppolo. He's a $27 million quarterback. Nick Mullins is an undrafted free agent, making $750,000. This should not have been a conversation. The confidence that Mullins showed on the field versus the Jets and versus the Giants was the confidence I want to see from Jimmy Garoppolo on a weekly basis. He should be the guy. He absolutely should be the starting quarterback for the San Francisco 49ers. That's without question. He is better than Nick Mullins. He is better than C.J. Beathard. I just want to see him be the guy that everyone keeps telling me he is. I want to see him be the guy who's getting paid $27 million. I want to see him be the guy for the San Francisco 49ers. If this team is going to take that next step and actually win the Super Bowl, if this team is beyond that, or actually shorter than that, if this team is going to have a good season this year, last year is in the past. If this team is going to have a good season this year, Jimmy is going to have to get back on the field and he's going to have to play at a high level. Because there's too many injuries on both sides of the ball. This is not 2019. We don't have that elite defense. It's still a good defense, but it's not elite that you can just lean on. The running game is not as strong as it was last year. We're ninth in the league in rush yardage, you know, treading water a little bit sometimes. We're missing Raheem Mostert. We're missing Tevin Coleman. If this team's really going to go as far as people say they can go, people want them to go, then number 10 has to get back on the field, and number 10 has to play at a consistently high level. But a lot of the mistakes I saw Nick make last Sunday night versus Philadelphia, I've seen Jimmy Garoppolo make some of those same mistakes. Poor footwork, bad mechanics, errant throws, poor decision-making, lack of accuracy. I've seen the same thing at the $27 million quarterback that I saw at the $750,000 quarterback. So that's my weekly Garoppolo rant. Nick played like shit. There's no other way around it. He realized who he was. He couldn't handle prosperity. He is a lower grade, poor man's version of Ryan Fitzpatrick. And that's fine. You are who you are. He's in the NFL getting a check. He's doing something right. But as far as him being the starting quarterback for the San Francisco 49ers long term, that should be put to bed. As far as him being anything beyond what people were saying he could be last week, that should also be put to bed. And that's just that. Our quarterback situation I would describe as being murky. Our number one guy is a bad ankle. And I think when he does play, I think he's still protecting that knee he blew out a couple years ago. I don't think he's 100% confident in his knee. I think he plays cautious, overly conservative. I think when the pressure gets to him, he gets a little nervous because of that knee. And the pressure was there for Nick Mullins all night. Which leads me to our offensive line. Jesus Christ. Trent Williams was awesome the first three games. Trent Williams was fucking terrible last Sunday night versus Philadelphia. Trent Williams got beat consistently. Trent Williams had a false start penalty on an earlier drive in the first half that hurt us. Trent Williams had a holding penalty that hurt us throughout the game. I don't know what got into him. Trent Williams looked like shit. He looked like Eric Flowers out there. He was a turnstile at left tackle. Consistent pressure coming off the edge. And 71 is looking back, trying to figure out what the fuck happened. Well, you got beat. That's what happened. And as much as I like Trent Williams, as complimentary as I've been of him the first 3 weeks, last Sunday versus a great defensive line. And Philadelphia has a great rush. If you look at their win-loss record, them being 1-2-1, you can count them out as being a shitty football team. And all the injuries they had, with Alshon Jeffrey being out, DeSean Jackson being out. You know, they have a patchwork, makeshift offensive line. They had a brother starting the left tackle who had just started playing football 2 years ago. You know, the Eagles are just kind of treading water. Fortunately for them, they're playing the NFC least. So they're actually in first place with one win. But the Eagles do have a good rush. And they made mincemeat out of the 49ers offensive line. Trent Williams had a bad game. He was only, as bad as he played, Mike McGlinchey was even worse. Mike McGlinchey couldn't block a phone call. Mike McGlinchey wears number 69. I would rather have Tekashi 6ix9ine play right tackle for the 49ers. I'd rather have a mediocre New York rapper with a penchant for snitching to the police play right tackle for the San Francisco 49ers than Mike McGlinchey. How many times am I going to watch a Niner game and see 69 getting pushed back into the face of whoever's playing quarterback, whether it be Garoppolo or Nick Mullins? Mike McGlinchey is terrible. And Mike McGlinchey was the ninth pick in the draft the year he came out. I think it was 2018. This is his third year. Where are the receipts at? You should be better than this. You're the ninth pick in the draft. You were a much ballyhooed prospect coming out of college out of Notre Dame. And full disclosure, I'm a Notre Dame fan for college football. So I watched Mike McGlinchey play in college a lot. And I was high on him coming out of college. And when the draft came around, we had the ninth pick that year. I was like, we need to solidify our offensive line. We need help on our offensive line. We should get Mike McGlinchey. So I was happy when the pick was actually made, when they actually picked McGlinchey. 3 years later, I'm not so happy anymore. He's fucking terrible. Game after game, week after week, performance after performance, Mike McGlinchey is getting pushed around like a nerd in high school. Just getting bullied. on a consistent basis every week, the opposing team's edge rusher, whoever's lined up across from Mike McGlinchey, picks him up by his ankles and dips his head into a toilet, takes his lunch money, gives him a wedgie, beats him up, shoves him in a locker. He gets bullied on a weekly fucking basis. Mike McGlinchey is fucking terrible at right tackle. And it begs the question, do the 49ers need to replace? Should he be benched? Mullins was benched. Should Mike McGlinchey be benched? I don't think it's going to happen. You know, you think back to that playoff game versus Minnesota where Keller Witherspoon got beat by Stephon Diggs early in the game for the Vikings' only touchdown. What ensued immediately after? Witherspoon was benched for Emmanuel Mosley. So if we're going to hold people accountable, let's keep that trend going. Kyle's not going to bench him, though. Kyle likes him. I think McGlinchey somehow is related to Matt Ryan. And Matt Ryan and Shanahan have a good relationship. So that was also part of the reason why he got drafted. Because Shanahan was able to be a little bit close to McGlinchey. Get a chance to get to know him a little bit, talk with him. So he just liked the guy. So he was always going to be that pick with a nice pick in that 2018 draft. But like I said, where are the receipts? He's looking like shit at right tackle. And Trent Williams at left tackle made Josh Sweat on Sunday night look like, I don't know, 1993 Reggie White. And he just destroyed this man all game. Pressure consistently in Mullins' face. It was all around bad performance from your quarterback and your offensive line. That may have been that really is what lost the game. I think everyone else played at least decently enough to win it. Thought our receivers were good. Kittle, like I said, 15 for 138. The score, Pro Football Focus had him graded as 92.2 for his game last Sunday. So Kittle was in a different league from everybody else. But I thought our quarterback and our offensive line lost his football game for us. Nick Mullins, Trent Williams, Mike McGlinchey in particular. Some questionable decisions and play calling from Kyle Shanahan, but I would pin this loss on three guys in particular. Nick Mullins, Trent Williams, Mike McGlinchey. Going forward, you have to have a better offensive line. The interior line got cleaned up last week versus New York, and the interior line has been an issue for the past 2 or 3 years in San Francisco. Now you got your both tackles, your right tackle and your left tackle, both stinking up the joint. At least with Williams, he's had good games this season. McGlinchey has not had a good game yet, except in run blocking. But in pass protection, I don't know. It's just not there. And going forward against good football teams, it's going to come out to bite us even more. When you play against elite pass rushers down the stretch, it's going to come out to bite you. If you can't protect the quarterback, you can't win. If your quarterback isn't playing at a high level, you really can't win. The degree of difficulty increases if your quarterback is playing like shit. Everyone else has to be perfect, and that's just asking for too much. This was a terrible loss. Losing to a team like Philadelphia, like I said, has a good rush. That's about really it. They don't do anything else well. Bunch of receivers out. Their running game is not existent. And they came in desperate. They came in hungry, and they got a win. So congratulations to them. I won't take nothing away from them. But this is a game San Francisco was supposed to win. They were favored. The game, the lines from Vegas had them as a 9.5-point favorite, and you lose by 5. And now you got Miami coming in this week. There's no prediction. I really can't tell you how that game's going to play out. Miami's one of those teams that you know they're going to play you tough. They're going to give you a great effort. They gave Seattle a great game last week. That game went down to the last minutes of the fourth quarter. So they made Seattle work for that win last week. Brian Flores has those guys playing hard. They don't lay down for anybody. They'll give you a fight. Can Kyle Shanahan get this team up to snuff to beat that Miami team in what I would consider a must-win game? Once again, when you look at the back end of the schedule, San Francisco needs to take care of these games on the front end to put themselves in a good position going forward and playing in a tough, competitive division where you're currently sitting in last place at a win-loss record of 2-2. It's not the NFC least. It's not where the Eagles are in first place with 1 win, 2 losses, and 1 tie. You know, our division is much better. The NFC West, in my opinion, is the best division in pro football. There's no losing records in that division. We're 2-2. Arizona's 2-2. Rams are 3-1. Seattle's 4-0. So every team in that division is good. There's going to be a dogfight down the stretch. We try to stay competitive in that division and try to make the playoffs. Nothing's guaranteed. So if these issues that San Francisco has, try to clean them up as best as possible. Hope you get some guys back from injury going forward. Take care of the games you're supposed to win, like this game this Sunday versus Miami. and just try to position yourself as best you can for that stretch late in the season going to the very end. Disappointing loss. Can't say that enough. You know, you can't lose games you're supposed to win, but that's the NFL. The other guy gets paid. The other team's putting in work, studying film, practicing, etc. Everyone's trying to win and be their best, so sometimes they're going to win, sometimes they're going to lose, all those other cliches. Hopefully it's better this week. We'll see what happens on Sunday versus Miami. I got another podcast coming up where I'll be recapping everything else that happened in week 4 of the NFL football season. I'll talk about the other teams and everything else that's going on, and also talking about some of the news of the day. So we'll see you on the next go-round. Picture me rolling them out with Deion Gordon Podcast. Peace.